Open your Bibles to the book of Job, and we'll get into that study. Maybe. That's one I'm too close to. There we go. We'll get into that study in just a moment there in the book of Job. If you'll indulge me a minute, I think I'll make some comments this evening, since it's predominantly the membership here tonight, and maybe rather than take that kind of time later on in the week where there might be visitors and some of the things that I might share with you for a moment are not necessarily pertinent to them, I think I'll just make some personal comments tonight. As I've said all week, I certainly do appreciate the opportunity to be with you and have considered it a privilege and an honor to stand before this congregation. Have stood in this general area anyway. I want to go back up there and speak. I feel funny down here in a way, but that's where it all began for me, right back there. A long time ago, it seems like now. And I want to commend you for that. The brethren here need to understand that what you have done for young preachers is affecting the gospel work in all over the globe. You all have had a tremendous benefit and effect on the work of the gospel, not just here in this community, which is your focus, and never lose sight of that. That's your primary obligation, is to shine a light and be standing for the truth and pillar of the truth right here in Payton City. But your work and effort in times past has benefited folks across the globe. All over the world, men have gone and preached the gospel of Jesus Christ through your financial support, through your actual encouragement and family upbringings of folks that grew up right here in this place. A lot of folks ask me, you may not realize, a lot of people call this place Jerusalem. You may not know that. But there are some preachers that call us, those of us who grew up here and still preach, they call us Jerusalem boys. And the reason for that is there's just so many of us that come out of Payton City. They even talk about us sitting on our back porches and gazing towards the temple and those kinds of things. And it's kind of interesting because there are a lot of folks that have come out of this place that have gone on to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm honored to be part of that group. There are some excellent men that are out there preaching the gospel and sharing the message of the good news of Christ all over the world. And I'm just honored to be one of those many who have done that. A lot of people have asked me, how does Payton City do it? And I tell them there's no magic recipe in relationship to that. I've always looked at it as simple opportunity with encouragement. I think that this congregation has done a marvelous job in giving young men opportunity to learn how to speak and teach, proclaim God's word. A lot of congregations have not done it, still continue not to do it in some ways, and others have picked up on what you have done in the past and are now also producing young men who are gospel preachers. But I don't want to only talk about those who are gospel preachers. I want to encourage the young folk here this evening to also consider the needs of deacons and elders, to be qualifying yourself now in order that you might serve in those capacities in the future, that the Lord's church here might continue to be a strength. It's been my privilege, as I said the other night, to know Arnold and Jack all of my life and to realize their good work as elders. Utilize that. I encourage you to go to Mo and Arnold and Jack now and sit down and talk to them. You want to know about the work of an elder? Go spend a couple of days. It'll take a couple of days or maybe longer. But go spend some time with those men who've spent years in that capacity. Go sit down and talk with them. I'm sure they'd be glad to share with you what that kind of work entails and what it means to be an elder. Learn from them. Use that wealth of wisdom and benefit that is before you. I'm afraid sometimes that for many congregations, for whatever reason, that as soon as you appoint an elder, he becomes the most unapproachable person to the church, and it's not his fault. He's the same guy he's always been. He's the same approachable man he always was, but the moment he becomes an elder, all of a sudden, the congregation feels like I can't talk to him and I can't approach. That's nonsense. I hope that you embrace these men, that you'll continue to encourage them as they are not young as they were when they started. I was a kid when they were appointed as elders, and I'm 35 years old. They were younger men then, and I hope you'll encourage them as they grow older, that you'll encourage them in their work and service as elder, and Mo as well as he works with the congregation here. I know that Dad would appreciate a man like Mo in this pulpit. I know that would have been something that he would have approved of, and he would have enjoyed working hand in hand with Mo as I have. And I appreciate him and the work that Mo is doing here. And without sounding, and trying to find words is difficult at times, but without sounding overly braggadocious of you or in some pride way, the work here is very important. And I don't know whether from within you appreciate it. Sometimes maybe you have to, as I have done, get out away from this work and see the church in other areas to begin to appreciate how important this work and this centralized location. This church is an anchor for soundness throughout this valley. You're in a wonderful location in relationship to the churches. You're about 45 minutes from everybody. You can go to Parkersburg in 45 minutes. You can get to Wheeling area in 45 minutes. You're about 45 minutes east, west, north, south. You can be there. You're kind of in the middle of it all. And you have had a great effect on the Lord's work in this surrounding area. And you should be encouraged in that. But that's not to say quit and say, well, we did a good job, let's stop. That just means that the pressure's on. You've got a responsibility that you've built by working so diligently in the cause of Christ. There now is a great obligation that you've placed upon yourself, and receive it with honor, but recognize it is an obligation to continue in that soundness, continue in that faithful service. Have you been perfect? No, because I was once here, and I know that I wasn't, and so when I was here, you weren't. But I know that you strive for that, and I know you work but diligently to try to please God, to serve Him and honor Him, and I appreciate so much all that you've done for me in the past, that what you continue to do by way of encouragement to me and to all of us who preach the gospel. Keep on keeping on, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Encourage you so much as I can to just keep serving the Lord. Continue to be a light in this community and continue each other's encouragement and service to God. Rally around these elders and continue to work with them. Help the younger to encourage them to begin to produce in their lives what are necessary to be deacons and elders in this congregation. And allow this church to be a light and a beacon in this area for years and years to come, until this world comes to an end. That would be what I would hope and pray for this congregation. Let's move into our study tonight. Speak about the integrity of Job's faith. Sometimes we talk about Job, and we speak about his patience. We talk about his endurance. We talk about how long it was that he was able to endure such hardship and affliction. And sometimes maybe we miss, again, one of those pieces of the puzzle that sometimes gets overlooked within an overall theme, if you will, of a particular book. And that is that through it all, Job's faith and the integrity of that faith was maintained. I ask myself the question a lot of times when I study the book of Job, and that is, what would I have done? Or what would it have taken to shake my faith in Jehovah? At what stage of these messengers we're going to look at in just a few moments, would it have taken me and said, that's it, I'm done. There's no reason for me to continue any further. There's no reason for me to continue to be faithful and to maintain the integrity of that faith in relationship to my God. It's time for me to quit. And so this evening, let me suggest to you that not just the patience of Job should be examined, that not just how he endured and was able to battle through the challenges that he had, but the faith and the integrity of that faith that pushed him through with patience. It was the faith and confidence and trust he had in God in some moments that maybe you've missed in your study of the book of Job that I hope we can shed some light on this evening. Tonight, I'm going to try to use this screen. Back home, I have an off-centered pulpit back in Moundsville, and I'm able to take one step and look, and I can see my screen, so I don't use anything in front of me. But I've tried to do that all week, and it ain't working for me. So I'm going to let the screen stay up here tonight, and let's see if I can't look at it and not be too distracted by it. But I want us to realize, as you remember the account of Job here and the assessment of Satan in relationship to him speaking to God, he comes to God, and he talks about Job, and he says, Job only serves you because you've prospered him. The only reason Job is in your corner, Lord, is because you continue to bless him. If you hadn't made him so wealthy, and if you hadn't blessed him in such tremendous ways, he would have cursed you long ago and had left you laying behind long ago. But you've prospered him, and so he continues to serve. We appreciate that Satan also said, if you take the hedge away, you put a protective barrier around him. You have a servant. Well, even though in the conversation God says to Satan, as Satan comes and says, have you seen what I've done with your world? Have you seen the mess I've made of that place? All of your children, all those supposed creation of yours, they're all serving me. That's the devil's attitude. But then God says to him, do you, have you considered my servant Job? And he then makes these excuses. You've prospered him, or you've protected him. You put a hedge around him. You take the hedge away, and I'll get him to curse you, is what Satan says. And so the attempts begin in Satan's life here, or in Job's life. And one by one, Satan makes the attempts in order to try to get Job persuaded to begin to leave God. And let me suggest to you that he uses some tremendous measures in order to accomplish that. If you begin in chapter 1 and in verse 13, notice in this particular part that the messengers begin to bring messages to Job about things that are occurring with his wealth and with other aspects. In verse 13, and there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said the oxen were plowing, and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabians fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands, and fell upon the camels, and have carried them away, yea, and slain their servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone am escaped alone to tell thee. You know, it is interesting that I don't know about you, but I would, by the time I saw the second messenger, I think I'd seen enough. Each one, as each messenger comes, they add another piece of the problem. Job, this happened with your oxen and sheep. Job, this happened with your servants and your prosperity. Job, this happened with your camels. One by one, the devil was removing the prosperity that he felt was the only reason Job was serving God to begin with. Satan is convinced that you remove the wealth away from Job and he'll forget about God. And so one by one, he begins that process. The wealth, the prosperity, all the blessings of life that Job had are beginning to be taken away. But Satan doesn't stop there. Notice verse 18. While he was yet speaking, here comes another one. Here comes another person in and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elder's brother's house, and behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. To consider the calamity of losing your wealth, but now your family is under attack as well. I don't suppose that any of us might not be all that willing to lose a little prosperity and look around and see our family and say, well, at least we still have our family. At least we still have. A lot of people did that recently. When floods ravaged their homes, when hurricanes destroyed, for a lot of them, all they had. And they looked around, and I talked to several who always repeatedly said, at least we still have our family. Everyone's secure and safe. But for Job, from one moment of realizing my wealth is gone, to the next minute realizing my family, my children, now they're gone. And this one servant alone comes to tell me. And then Job's physical condition is attacked. Wasn't satisfactory. Devil wasn't done with him. Devil wasn't satisfied just attacking him at his wealth and prosperity and attacking his family. Now he's got to attack Job as well. Now God's told him, keep in mind, Satan thought he'd have him by now, and he hasn't. Job hasn't cursed God. Job hasn't turned his back on God yet. And so the devil wants to attack Job personally. And so God simply says to him, all right, you can do whatever you want, just don't kill him. And so he does just about that. In verse 7 of chapter 2, so went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils, from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took up him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Now, I don't know. Some people have told me about shingles. And I suppose there's probably a similarity to what Job was going through here. But here are boils. And I'm not a medical doctor by any stretch of the imagination, but the nurses in the room might be able to confirm this for me. But if you're from the soles of your feet to the crown of your head covered in boils, pretty much that's got it all, isn't it? That's pretty much it. There's nothing left. He is so miserable, friends. He's cracking off pots. He's cracking them and getting shards off of them so that he can take and scrape those boils to find any kind of relief that he can. That's what he said in verse 8. He took him a potsherd to scrape himself. He's so miserable that the only comfort he could find to bury himself in ashes. Find some relief. All of this after the sadness of losing prosperity and family. Now he's miserable, physically devastated. And if that's not enough, then Satan attacks him from maybe what I believe to be the most challenging level. And that is, Satan challenges him from his support structure. Satan uses his wife. Satan uses Job's wife to try to convince Job to just quit. Then said his wife in verse 9 unto him, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." There's the word we're talking about tonight. You find that interesting to me. When she talks to him, she doesn't say, "Why are you so patient? Why are you just have the patience of..." I guess you can't say you've got the patience of Job because he is Job. But why are you so strong? Why are you able to withstand? She says, why do you keep your integrity? Why do you continue to trust God when He's doing all this to you? Why do you continue to believe and trust and have faith in a God who allowed all these things to occur to you? Just curse Him and die, Job. Get it over with. But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips?" He said, "You mean to tell me that when all that was good and well, it was perfectly fine to be trustworthy and honor God, to maintain our integrity of faith while God blessed us, but the moment that prosperity, the moment that calamity comes, then I get to turn around and say, 'Well, God, now that you're not serving me, now, God, now that you're not blessing me, that I should just leave?' Shall we receive goodness and not evil?" he said. "Are we somehow exempt?" But let me suggest to you that the devil's working on him hard. Satan is working on him hard. He uses his wife in order to convince him. And if that's not enough, go over to chapter 6. And in verse 14 and 15. It's not only his wife that's the problem. Now his friends. Now his friends come into the picture. "To him that is afflicted, pity should be shown from his friend, but he forsaketh the fear of the Almighty. My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as the stream of brooks they pass away." He says, some friends I've got. He said, I should have been able to find comfort somewhere. My wife's turned against me. She wants me to curse God and die. My friends come along. Maybe there is a brook of benefit. Maybe I'll be able to refresh myself by the stream of those friends. But he says they're fake brooks. They're deceitful brooks, where there's no real water and no real benefit. In fact, they actually bring greater challenge than they do comfort. If you've ever studied the book of Job, I think maybe that's a part of it we miss. Maybe we kind of brush through it and look at all the patience that he goes through, all the endurance that he goes through, and we miss a very particular part of the book. And that is that he had three particular friends that came to visit him. After all this calamity and after all this challenge, when he needed help and support, there were friends who came and they weren't the least bit supportive. Now, initially, they tried. Initially, when you might remember this part, but initially when they came to Job, they don't do anything but just sit and be quiet. And you know, the fact of the matter is, when somebody suffers like this, when somebody suffers in this fashion, I suppose there might not be much else you can do. But just sit there and allow somebody to know I'm here. I tell folks sometimes, it's been a strange week for a little bit for me. We had a member pass away on Sunday, and I'll preach that funeral tomorrow morning. And sometimes I'll go and I'll stand with families, and you know, I speak for a living. I speak all the time. And yet I stand before those families and don't know what to say. There aren't any magic words. There aren't any magic thoughts. There's no great expression. There's no book on it that you can just to hear the magic words to say to wipe all sorrow away. And so his friends initially come and do what many of us would simply do and just come and be there. We're just there to support you. We don't know what to say, so we won't say anything. We're just silent. But friends, it's not that point that they were problematic to Job. It's when they actually began to speak that the problems came. When they actually began to speak is when the trouble began with Job. The question for us tonight is, will my faith be upheld when it's all that's left? Will I maintain, when that's all I've got left, prosperity gone, maybe family gone, maybe those who are around me won't support me. I want to serve God, but nobody else around me seems to be interested in Him. I want to be a servant of Jehovah, but nobody else seems to be one iota concerned about their soul. What will I do in those moments? When all that I have left in my life is my faith in God, what will I do with my faith when the pressures mount? Will I maintain the integrity of my faith, or will I give it away? Will I let Satan win in my life? How easy a target am I? You know, I'm curious about Job in some ways. I wrote an article a while back. I don't know where it got printed. It printed something I can't remember now, whether we printed it in Voice of the Valley. I think that's where it was. But I talked about and asked this question. If the book of Job were about you, what would the first few verses say? If the book of Job was about you and your faith and your life in relationship to God, what would it say? Would it say this? There was a man in the land of Uz, verse 1 of chapter 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Friends, let me suggest to you that Job just didn't wake up one morning and had the patience and endurance and faith and conviction that he had to be able to get through all those things that we talked about. Job was a man of faith and integrity long before the devil ever showed up on the scene. See, Job was a man of conviction and strength and trust in his God long before Satan ever inflicted him with boils, long before he ever took his family away, long before all the prosperity went away, long before his wife said, "Curse God and die," Job was a man of faith. Job was a man who eschewed evil. Read those words in your mind. Read that verse over and over again, and then just ask yourself the simple question. What would verse 1 of the book of Brian say? What would verse 1 of your book say about you? And I would pray to God that this is exactly the description that all of us would have. One who was upright in his service to God. One that feared God and respected Him. One who eschewed evil. You see, Job was a man of faith long before the challenges come. See, what happens with us is that the challenges come and we falter and fall away and we wonder why. And let me suggest to you the reason why is we never built the kind of faith necessary to get through the challenges. We didn't do the things necessary prior to the challenges in order to get through them. We've spent our life just going through and everything's fine and everything's okay and everything's wonderful and never spent any time building faith. Never spent any time building trust and conviction in God. And then the challenges begin to mount. The challenges come and we say, "Where do I go from here?" Because the faith isn't there. You see, you got to build it beforehand. You got to be a man like Job was before the challenges come. Then you're able to endure them. Then you have the patience that Job had. Then you have the convictions that he had. What will I do when the pressures mount with my faith? And let me suggest to you tonight, friends, that Satan does not play fair. If you're looking for Satan to be kind to you, you're looking in the wrong place. Satan will use every tactic and ability he has at his disposal to get you to leave God. If he can get you to curse God and die tonight, he would consider it a victory. You see, that's all he desires from us, is that we leave God and turn aside, and he won't play fair. And in Job's case, he even uses his friends against him. I want you to note for me with a little while here that these three friends did to Job. Let's begin with Eliphaz, and let's begin in chapter 4. And look at verse 6. In Job chapter 4 and verse 6, he says, "Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and thy uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, who ever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils they are consumed." Thank you very much, good buddy. He looks at Job, and you know what he says? He says, "You're so innocent, why are you suffering? Job, you claim to have been a righteous man. You were claimed to be, you're renowned as one who eschewed evil. You're renowned as one who supposedly was upright and perfect in his relationship with God. You're supposed to be one of the righteous. But we just proved that theory to be wrong. Because there's never been anybody innocent that ever suffered. Don't you believe that, friend? Eliphaz is way off the mark. That's not true at all. The innocent have suffered from the beginning. There have been challenges come to the upright people. There have been challenges that have come to faithful people from the very beginning of time. He's missed the point. But that's what he says to Job. If you're so innocent, why? If you can still read it on the chart, go to chapter 22 and in verse 4. Chapter 22 and in verse 4 of the book of Job. We'll stay primarily in the book of Job tonight. We'll move into the New Testament a little while at the end of our lesson. But in Job chapter 22, will he reprove thee? In verse 4, will he reprove thee for fear of thee? Will he enter with thee into judgment? Is not thy wickedness great and thy iniquities infinite? Job, you're so bad. You've got to be so evil, your iniquities couldn't even be listed. If we tried to write them down, they'd just go and go and go. They are infinite. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me that sometimes the most difficult challenges we face in relationship to our faith is when we know we're doing right and we're trying to serve the Lord and we're trying to trust in God and those around us try to convince us otherwise. Those around us try to say otherwise. Those are real challenges of faith. If you're so innocent, why are you suffering, Job? That's what Eliphaz had to say. Bildad enters the picture in Job chapter 8. He speaks up. Job chapter 8 and verse 3, notice what he has to say. In Job chapter 8 and verse 3, doth God pervert judgment? Or doth the Almighty pervert justice? If thy children have sinned against him and he hath cast them away for their transgression, if thou wouldest seek unto God betimes and make thy supplication to the Almighty, if thou wert pure and upright, surely now he would awake for thee and make the habitation of thy righteousness prosperous. Though thy beginning was small, yet thy latter end should greatly increase. You think about that statement. He says to him, if your children hadn't sinned, they wouldn't have died. That's what he said. Do you mean to tell me you're going to stand back here and continue this lie, this hypocritical approach? You're going to sit back and tell me, Job, that you have been upright and faithful? Haven't you learned anything from the tragedy or what he would say, that which was righteously coming to your children? You think of the sad statements he's making. Go to verse 13. So are the paths of all that forgot God, and the hypocrite's hope shall perish. He basically tells Job in this particular passage that your family died because of their sin and your hypocrisy. That's what he said. Their sins brought the reproach of God that shined down upon them. And your hypocrisy continues to be problematic. And yet Job's faith keeps going. Job's not going to give up on God yet. Even though his friends are doing everything they can to convince him he's not upright, he's not righteous, and he's not serving God, and he's not faithful. Job, you've been living a lie. You've been living this great big hypocrisy. They're trying every means possible to get him convinced that you just had to have done something wrong. You've got to have something that's amiss in your life. There can't be all this righteousness in your life and all these calamities keep coming. But look at what Zophar had to say. In chapter 11 and in verse 6. In chapter 11 and in verse 6. He said, "And that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, that they are double to that which is. Know therefore that God exacteth of thee that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth." Job, you're not even getting what you deserve. That's what he said. Job, your iniquities are so bad that God hasn't even treated you like he ought to treat you. For anybody to have suffered all those things that you've suffered, your iniquities have to be so infinite that God hasn't even dealt with you properly yet. chapter 20 and in verse 29. In chapter 20 and verse 29, this is the portion of a wicked man from God, and the heritage appointed unto him by God. This is your heritage, Job. You're just getting what's coming. Now we would say, with friends like these, who needs enemies? With friends like these, who one by one do all they can to convince God, or convince Job, that God should have punished him more, that God should have brought greater calamity, that your hypocrisy and your children's sins caused all this thing. You're not as upright as you claim to be. You're not as faithful as you claim to be. You're not as good as you claim to be. On every step of the way, it's an attack upon Job's faith and convictions in God. Every step of the way is Satan's continued effort to get Job to quit. Now, I say all that to ask you and I the same similar question, and that is, when I suffer challenge to my faith, what will I do? When I'm trying to serve God righteously, and I'm even accused of not being upright, when I'm being accused of not serving God as I ought, when I am, what will that do to my faith? You see, the attacks of Satan will come on every side. He's not going to play fair with you. He's not going to play fair with me. You see, Satan waits for the most opportune time to shake our faith. He takes advantage of every circumstance. He doesn't take any breaks. He doesn't have any kindness about him. There's nothing about him that says that, well, Brian's having a tough day today. Let me back off of him. The moment that you have a tough day is the exact moment that Satan will pour on. The day you are at your weakest is the day that the temptations seem to be the strongest. The day you are at the rock bottom is when Satan begins to kick. And he'll use anything possible. Your wife, pray God not, but it can happen. Your husband, your friends, he will use any source he can to get you to quit. And I say to you tonight, friend, don't. Don't think for a moment that quitting is the answer. Don't think for a moment that quitting will resolve anything. It will not help your circumstance one bit. All it will do will give Satan one more victory. Give him one more notch where he can say, I've gotten one more soul on my side of things. But don't be surprised what he'll do to get you there. Don't be surprised the tactics he will use to destroy your faith. We've got to build strong faith in God. We've got to build a conviction and trust in God that will carry me through those challenges. You see, they had a flawed concept concerning God and how God worked. And I'm not so sure that we don't have similar kinds of concepts today. You see, they said, if you're prosperous, you must be living right. I know a guy that used to say that all the time. Any little good fortune you have, you buy a new car. He'd say to you, must be living right. You able to afford that new car? Must be living right. I don't know where that came from. It didn't come from the Bible. It didn't come from the Bible. Now, it may sound like something good to say, and I sure hope you're living right, and God will bless us. Don't misunderstand the point I'm trying to make. He will care for us. He'll give us what we need, not always what we want. He'll give us what we need. But just because somebody's prosperous doesn't mean they're living right. In fact, the opposite could be said as well. There are those who say, just as his friends did, if you're suffering, you must have done something wrong. And that isn't true either. A friend of mine, when I was in college, we'd drive down the road and he'd be putting along his old Chevy Monza that he had. He could have that thing mashed to the floor and there'd be bicycles passing us. And he would see some guy go flying by in some fancy BMW or some Porsche or some fancy car that he thought was just tremendous. And he'd look to me and he'd say, why do the wicked prosper? I'm living right. I'm doing well as like best I can. I'm living by faith. I love my Lord. I'm serving Him. I'm a member of the Lord's church. I work hard and diligent in public service. I do all this for the Lord. And look at this piece of junk I'm still driving in. And look at that fellow. But I'm thankful his faith wasn't based in that. But you know, I know a lot of folks whose faith is based in those kind of things. There are a lot of folks who look around, and when they see the wicked prosper, they say to themselves, well, maybe that's the route I ought to try. I'm a little down on my luck. Financial matters are beginning to weigh me down. Things aren't so good for me right now. Maybe I need to try something different. And that's the bill of goods that Satan will sell you if you'll buy it. That's the bill of goods that Satan will try to get you convinced. That's the way those friends believe. That's the way a lot of folks believe. But friends, that's not the truth of the Scriptures. The good suffers along with the evil. The sun rises on the just and on the unjust. The rain falls on the righteous and upon the unrighteous, what Jesus said. Good and bad things happen to all kinds of people. Don't let those things begin to affect your faith. Many would take the seemingly easy road and just abandon their faith. It would have been a much simpler process to just do what his wife said. In Job 21 and verse 15, it would be tempting to think this way. What is the Almighty that we should serve Him? And what profit should we have if we pray unto Him? You know, that'd be an easier route for a lot of folks. What benefit really is there in serving God? Why do we even pray to Him anymore? You ever heard somebody say something to that effect? You go pray to your God if there is a God. I heard one fellow say one time that prayer is the last refuge of scoundrels. Is that all they think about the relationship between God and His children? What kind of faith is that? What kind of conviction is that? Oh, it's an easier road to just say, God hasn't done anything lately for me. God hasn't really blessed me all that much lately. What's the sense in working with Him any longer? What's the sense in staying faithful to Him? That's the sale that Satan's trying to convince you of, friends, but don't buy it. In Job chapter 35 and verse 3, when Elihu was speaking here, but he said, for thou saidest, what advantage will it be unto thee? What profit shall I have if I be cleansed from my sin? Every step of the way, Satan's trying to convince you and I that there's no real benefit in serving the Lord. You might as well just give up. There's no benefit in being faithful. What's the sense in maintaining the integrity of your faith? What's the sense in keeping going on and on and on serving the Lord when you don't see any immediate benefits? Don't be sold that lie, friend. Your faith's too important. Will we maintain in the face of adversity? Will we keep going in the same kinds of adversities that Job faced? Will we maintain our faith and keep going when sorrow seems to outweigh joy? When it seems like every phone call is the same listing of Job chapter 1. You ever had a day like that? Where it seems like every phone call just brings one more message that you didn't want to hear? We've all been there. In one fashion or another, we've all been there. We've all gotten that 3 o'clock in the morning phone call that nobody wants to get. We've all been there. We've all been there in life. Where it seemed like we couldn't find joy if we searched all night long for it. We can't seem to find our way out of the sorrow. It seems like sadness is winning at every turn. But friends, it is those moments in life that we must maintain the integrity of our faith even stronger than it was before. It's at those moments in life where we must say to ourselves, I will not quit on God. That is not the answer. No matter what anybody tells me or no matter what my thought processes might be at the moment, I will not quit. That is not the answer. I refuse to let sorrow win. When sadness appears at every turn, we need to maintain our faith. Will we have the fortitude of Job? Go back into Job 13 and verse 15 for a moment. In Job chapter 13 and verse 15. Notice what Job says here. This part of maybe the favorite context within the context, if you will. Job's defending his integrity. He's telling them why it is that he's maintained his faith through all this. And he comes to this very strong conclusion in verse 15 when he says, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Some translations use the word, I will prove my ways before him. That's probably a better translation. Because what Job is trying to say, it's not I'll maintain my own walk my own path. That's not the thought at all. What he's saying is, whatever comes, comes. Even if God is doing this, even if God is the one slaying me, I'm still going to trust Him. There must be a reason behind it. Even if God is the one perpetrating this, you don't think Job had struggles with all this? He certainly did. There was a time where Job even questioned how God was ruling the universe. I believe in Job chapter 39, it's not on the chart, but you can go into that passage. And I believe in Job 39 is where Job is complaining a little bit. I would handle this a lot better, Lord, if I was in charge of the universe. You know what God said to him? He says, sit back and get ready because I'm going to answer you in a whirlwind. I'm going to answer that in a whirlwind. He said, where were you when I created this world? Where were you, Job, when I put all this in motion? How dare you question how I run this universe? Friends, we need to have this mindset of Job at this stage, where he said, if God even slayed me, I'm still going to trust Him. Whatever it is that comes, I know that God will allow this to be worked through, and faith will not be given up, regardless of what happens. I will trust Him. In Job chapter 27 and in verse 5, he said, God forbid that I should justify you till I die. I will not remove mine integrity from me. There's that word again. I will not remove it. I don't care what happens. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. You know, I love that phrase, hold fast. We see it throughout Scripture. And friends, let me suggest to you, all that simply means is you get a real good grip on something and you hold on to it. I remember when I first started riding roller coasters. You get on a roller coaster, and real men, when they ride roller coasters, you know, they go up the top of the hill and they ride down that thing, and I'm brave. No, not me. You know, I'm holding fast to the handle. I have planned escape routes. You can ask my wife. We get on the ride and say, now if this happens, I'm going to jump over here. Really? You really are, Brian. That's what she says. Really? You can't even climb the steps at home, let alone climb over there. But I hold fast. You get a hold of it. And that's what he said. I'm going to hold fast to the integrity of my faith. It's the last, in fact, I'll let go of everything before I let go of my faith. Because, friends, Satan's just going to keep taking it away. He's just going to keep taking it away anyway. It's all going to belong to him. You keep giving it up, and he'll keep taking it. He says, I'm going to hold fast. I'll not give way to unrighteousness. I'm going to hold fast to my righteousness. I'm not going to let it go. My heart shall not reproach me so long as I live. Friends, make that statement. That's refrigerator scripture. Get that etched into your mind. Put that in the forefront of your mind. I will live righteous all the days of my life. As long as I live, I will hold fast to my righteousness. That's the dedication of faith that Job had. That's why he was so patient. That's why he endured the challenges. That is why he was able to live as he lived. Because the integrity of his faith was not going anywhere. And oh, to learn that. To learn that from Job. Well, I quit at the first sign of trouble. Oh, Lord, so long as everything's smooth and easy, I'll be just right there with you. But the first sign of trouble, I may have to reconsider this. Isn't that exactly what he said over in Matthew 13, verses 5 and 6, and his explanation of the parable in verses 20 and 21? When he talked about those seed that was scattered upon the rock, and he says it springs forth for a moment. It receives that seed, and it springs forth. But he says what? It has no root, and therefore quickly withers away and dies. Friends, our faith needs to have some root. It needs to have some conviction. Parents, one of the greatest tasks we have as parents is to teach our children about faith and their God, to educate them about the knowledge of the will of God, and about how to build their own faith. Because I can't give my children my faith. It won't do them any good. See, because there's going to come a day when they're going to have to go out into the world and they're going to have to make choices and decisions that are based on their faith. They're going to have to go out into the world, and they're going to have to make decisions based upon the faith and conviction that they've built in their life. And if all they've known is Daddy said don't do this, and Daddy said don't do that, and Mama said this, and Mama said that. Did throughout this entire context, every time a challenge came, he reasoned from his conviction. If he reasoned from the consequences of the things going on around him, he would have quit long ago. If he looked at all the things that were happening, he could have easily said, it's not worth this. The consequences are too great. I'm losing too much. But he reasoned from conviction, and he came up with the right answers. Your children, my children, when they go out and have to make their own decisions in life, teach them to reason from conviction. Teach them to say no to things because it's wrong, not just because you don't want them to do it or their mother doesn't want them to do it. Now, those are well and good initially, but there needs to be some conviction. Instill in them faith. Faith in their God. Trust in their God. Conviction. That's what Job had. Not a conviction that had no root. Not a conviction that withered away quickly, but a conviction and faith that led him through all those challenges. Will my love and respect for Jehovah carry me through, even when I don't understand my challenge? You ever just thrown up your hands and say, I don't get this. I just don't get it. There are times in our lives we don't understand it. We don't know why it's happening. We're trying to do everything that's right and it still doesn't work. That's Satan working. That's Satan working on your mind. He's trying to tell you something. He's trying to tell you, that's right, you don't understand. Maybe you'll think, oh yeah, I think for a little while. You're not getting this very well. Maybe you ought to think about it a little differently. Maybe you ought to let go of that faith for a little while. Maybe the integrity of your faith ought to be let go. Maybe I can show you a little better way. You see, it's at those moments in life, again, that maybe our faith needs to shine forth even greater. When we don't understand all the things that are going on, when we can't get quite a grip on why things are occurring the way they are, those are, again, moments where faith needs to shine through, not be vanished away, not be given up. The simple question is then, where will my faith be at the end of the day? Through whatever calamities and tragedies and difficulties and problems that this life has to offer me, where will my faith be at the end of the day? If you go to chapter 42, you find the end of the day in relationship to all these things to Job. Job finally learned that his faith was not in vain. It all finally came to fruition, if you will. It all finally came to a point where Job's faith and integrity and relationship to God brought the benefit he knew it would. Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not, things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Here I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Wherefore I abhor myself, and repent in dust and ashes. Even though Job never let go of his faith, even the questions that he asked God brought him to a point where he said, it's time for me to even let go of that. You've got a greater understanding than I'll ever have. You know more. Your knowledge is too wonderful for me. I don't even like the questions. But the Lord was pleased with him. Eventually they pray that his friends might learn the same. Lord, so was so, in verse 7, that after the Lord has spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee, and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken of me the thing that is right as my servant Job hath. The friends learned that their thoughts were not correct. The friends learned, real quick here, God says, my wrath is kindled upon you. You all didn't speak to Job like you should have. You all didn't treat him like you should have treated him. You did not understand things like you thought you did. Therefore take unto you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job, and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. My servant Job shall pray for you. For him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, in that ye have not spoken of me the thing which is right like my servant Job. It's interesting that the exact opposite has occurred. The friends kept telling Job, God's punishing you. God's punishing you. Now God actually comes to the friends and says, you know who deserves to be punished? It's you. But you go and make an offering, and you pray, ask Job to pray that I don't bring this folly upon your heads. And God then honors his faith. We know the rest of the account. God prospers him again. He benefits him again here in the latter part of the chapter. More than he had before. And friends, let me suggest to you that's a wonderful picture of the way heaven is. Whatever we sacrifice on behalf of our faith here in this life will be received in return 100-fold in eternity. Whatever sacrifices we have to make in order to maintain the integrity of our faith here will be honored for eternity in heaven. It's worth it. It's worth it. Were there days and moments where Job wondered? I'm sure he did. He asked plenty of questions along the way. That's part of the whole context as well. There were moments where he asked a lot of questions and was really concerned, but he maintained his faith throughout it all. Friends, there are going to be moments in your life where you're going to wonder about things and you're not going to quite understand exactly why things are occurring, but keep your faith. Heaven is worth it. It's a place so beautiful that it's indescribable in some ways. It is a place of honor. It is a place where all the saints and children of God will abide forever and ever. It's worth whatever I have to sacrifice here on earth. What about me? Will I trust God when challenges mount? In 1 Peter 4 and in verse 19, he said, "Wherefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him in well-doing as unto a faithful Creator." Friends, entrust your soul, your faith, your confidence, your relationship with God. Entrust it into the hands of the Creator. Trust your life into the hands of the one who gave you life, who put us here to begin with. Where's your faith tonight? Where's your conviction in relationship to God this very hour? If the question would come in relationship to me, what would be said? If my faith was put on the page this evening, if my faith was the one being written about tonight, where would it be? Would I be a servant of God, maintaining the integrity of my faith despite challenges? Would I be seen as maybe one who let go pretty quickly? Let, really, in reality, probably some minor things compared to what Job dealt with. Let some minor things shake me and my faith. Or maybe you face some of these similar challenges. Maybe you face some of the kind of calamities and difficulties that Job faced. Where's the integrity of your faith tonight? Where's the integrity of my faith tonight? Am I standing aright with God? If this world were to come to an end this hour, sometimes we say this night, this very hour. If not, why not? If my soul would be required of me this very hour, where would it stand in relationship to faith to God? Where would the integrity of my faith be? What would be said this moment about my relationship with Jehovah? If you're subject to the gospel in some way, if we could encourage you in your walk of faith in some way, encourage you to be restored back to God, whatever your circumstance or case might be, begin to walk anew with God tonight. Walk your walk of faith tonight once again. Leave this building with courage and dedication and commitment in your heart that you might serve the Lord the rest of the days of your life and that eternity will be worth it all in the afterwhile. Are you subject in some way? Can we help you in some way? Won't you come even this hour while we stand and while we sit?